welcome to episode 2 of Getting Air. My name is Terry Green. I'm a program manager at eCampus Ontario, and this is our weekly chat with the people of the Ontario post-secondary education sphere. And this week I'm chatting with Dr. Aaron Longeil. I hope I said your last name correctly.
It's pretty close.
Oh, good. And he is from Laurentian University, and he's going to chat with us about what he does there. Welcome.
Thank you.
So tell me a little bit about what you do at Laurentian.
I am a master lecturer. I teach with the Department of Mathematics and Computer Science. I would say my focus is pretty much on computer science, but I also dabble a little bit in video game design with my students, because we do have a specialization in game design. But that would sum up most of my daily activities, I suppose.
Okay, so tell me how you got to be where you are, like, specifically with video game design. Did you study that, or tell me a little bit about that?
I didn't study it, other than being an enthusiast since about the age of 8, I suppose. I would say most of my formal video game studying is something that's relatively new, but it was something that we wanted to offer as a department to appeal to students that wanted something other than just a straightforward computer science degree. And with all of the popularity of video games, I mean, they're fairly ubiquitous. It was a fairly natural fit for us to be able to offer something like that. And I was one of the architects of that program, and it's something that I enjoy immensely.
That sounds great. You were an architect of the program. When was it designed and developed, and how many times have you delivered?
I think we're in about our fifth year, roughly 4 or 5 years for sure. I'd have to go back and check the archives to know for sure. But I think it's something in that neck of the woods, and it's something that's offered every year. So we have students that graduate from the program pretty much every year, but it runs along parallel with our Bachelor of Computer Science program. And it essentially is sort of a complement to the computer science, our standard computer science degree, but it adds more of a sort of a minor, a focus to the third and fourth year that gives the students that designation of video game design, so that should they decide to do that as a career, they've hopefully got an advantage over maybe applicants that don't. And it also prepares them to go into things like independent development as well.
Yeah, that sounds really, really cool. I'm guessing the students maybe work to create some of their own games in the program?
Yep, absolutely. There's two opportunities in specific for them to do that. So the first time that they have a structured opportunity to design their own games is in our third year Game Design 1 course, where they have 12 weeks to come up with pretty much an original concept. It doesn't have to be original. They're allowed to use existing, maybe open source games or something along those lines and extend them, but it has to be a fairly major extension. But the second time they have an opportunity to do that in a structured way is their fourth year game design project. So the hope is that by the time they graduate, they've got one or two or three games in their portfolio that they can take to an interview. The third year course, they're allowed to work in teams, and then in the fourth year course, they work alone. So it's kind of a different experience both times.
Any student examples that popped to mind that were extra exciting?
Oh, there's some every year. It's every year I take a couple of groups aside and say, you know, if you spent maybe another 6 or 7 weeks on this, it's pretty much publishable. We've had students develop VR games long before VR was available to the general public. We've had games that use all sorts of fancy peripherals and different technologies. And some of the games are just plain creatively awesome. They don't use anything special in terms of hardware or software. They're just fundamentally good ideas. I don't want to give up too many of their secrets just in case they're still working on them. But the creativity that comes out of some of those projects is astounding.
One of my favorite examples of using technology and learning was there's this game called Typing of the Dead. Have you heard of that?
I haven't, but I'm sort of trying to picture it.
So it was a commercial game called Night of the Dead or something, a zombie killing game. And it had its commercial run. And then they just released it to the public domain or something. And so another company took it. And instead of having to shoot the zombies, they now had words on their chest as they came to you. And you had to type it to avoid dying. And it was just such a great fit of learning to type to stay alive and not get killed by zombies. That's my favorite.
I'm aware of like running apps that'll play zombie noises as you're running, and they're sort of your interval markers. That's the first typing zombies that I've heard of, but it's actually a really good example of sort of the gamification of learning, taking a mundane task like learning to type and making it more exciting through game elements. That's a pretty extreme example, but it's definitely a good one.
What are some of your kind of favorite other examples?
Of gamification?
Yeah.
Well, that's something that I do fairly extensively in my first year computer science class, which, you know, if you're going to talk about mundane computer science, it pretty much starts in first year when you're learning about loops and if statements and variables. And if you don't come in with a predisposition to find that kind of thing interesting, if you're not hardwired for logic, it can be kind of boring work, I suppose. It's hard to put it any other way. So a couple of years ago with a student of mine, we developed a badge system that was designed to sort of motivate the students to do a little bit more than maybe what they were doing just on their own, to kind of push them a little bit harder than just a grade would. So taking cues from probably fitness, the fitness industry more than anybody else, we started awarding badges for students that would actually submit all of their assignments instead of skipping one, or performance-based assignments for doing better than, or sorry, performance-based badges for doing better than 80% on all of the assignments, or, you know, things along those lines, just to give them a nudge into some good behaviors instead of, you know, falling off in the second half of the term when midterms are happening and everybody's busy and you're sort of looking for what you can skip. We kind of wanted to push them to keep going.
So badging is considered gamification?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So anything related to trophies, badges, achievements, these are things that a lot of my students are fairly familiar with. To be honest, it's hard to find an app that doesn't pop up every now and then and say, congratulations, you've listened to 5 audiobooks, you're an avid listener. Or Fitbit is sort of the Fitbit in the fitness industry. I don't want to single them out in particular, but it's they've sort of tapped into that need for extrinsic motivation to keep people working out, to keep them active. And this is why, you know, phones are always going off saying, congratulations, you've walked the equivalent of, you know, Sudbury to Toronto or whatever the case, 3 times around the world if you're a really avid walker. These kinds of techniques certainly aren't new. I don't know how extensively they're being used in post-secondary education. I know that there's a lot of examples of using them in lower grades and in high school. But I don't think there's a lot of examples yet of them being used in post-secondary education, which I think is something that if we fine-tune them so that they are complementary to the course material and complementary to the habits we want our students to build, I think that they're a fantastic opportunity to push students a little bit harder and to help them realize that, you know, by working a little bit more, there are some gains to be had.
Yeah, that's I love that stuff. eCampus Ontario has their EdTech Sandbox, and open badging is one of the big toys in there that Joanne Kehoe is the lead on. So you should chat with her. She's one of the other program managers.
Yep, absolutely. I met Joe over the summer at one of the eCampus Ontario events.
All right. And we're building Ontario Extend badges, so maybe you'll retroactively get a couple.
Absolutely. That would be pretty spectacular.
So when you first came on, you mentioned you're a master lecturer. What does that mean?
It's a fairly fancy title. That means that I'm a teaching stream professor. So rather than having research obligations, I teach about double what a lot of my colleagues would, a lot of my tenure track colleagues, and all of the research I do is pretty much on the voluntary side of things. So I'm a teaching stream professor.
Okay. And how long have you been a master lecturer?
I think I'm in about my seventh year now. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's cool. So what do you think your role as a master lecturer can kind of allow you to see or do? Like, what perspective do you have that you might not have had before in your role?
Well, before this role, I was a technologist with our department, which basically means that I took care of the computers. I had the opportunity to teach as a sessional, so I guess a one-term contract. And, you know, even as a technologist, I was very student-focused. So even though teaching wasn't officially part of my job description, I would spend a lot of time in the labs helping students to, you know, as a computer science grad myself, I could go in and help them with some of those fundamental concepts or ideas that tend to trip up people when they're learning these things for the first time. When I had my first sessional contract, it was kind of like a little light bulb that went off saying, you know, I think I like this. I think I could do this for a living. And, you know, a few wheels had to turn just right. And a few years later, I became a master lecturer. I don't know that much has changed in terms of my perspective on the importance of teaching. I think I've always understood that, you know, teachers play a critical role in skill development and even just development of individuals and groups. I think what's changed over the last 7 years is the details of, you know, what is important in engaging a learner. So I spend a fair amount of my time making sure that what I'm offering, whether it's curriculum or delivery, is interesting to the students, because I think, and it's not just post-secondary teachers, it's at every level, I think we fight a lot of distractions that are sort of permanently part of students' lives now. And I think it's important that we engage students on their level, on their terms, somewhat, not necessarily all the way, but we have to incorporate the things that they find interesting and kind of remind them that we find the same things interesting. And, you know, finding that connection between teacher and student, whether or not you're teaching a class of 10 students or 150 students or more, I think that there are ways to make those connections and to make the entire process more interesting for both the educator and the learner.
I think I'm pretty glad for Ontario post-secondary education that light bulb went off for you when you were a technologist.
I appreciate that compliment.
So this summer you went to the Ontario Extend Institute, right?
I did.
Yeah. Can you tell me a little bit about that experience?
That was the first opportunity that I've had maybe ever, maybe in a while, to really sit down and talk with people that are really interested in engaging students using things like technology. So we did talk about more than just technology, but I think being a computer scientist and being a tech-focused educator, I think that was One of the more interesting things is to realize that there are people out there digging up tools, kind of the way that I like to dig up tools, whether or not it's for engagement, delivery, content generation. It was really nice to be with a group of like-minded individuals, even beyond the technology part. And ours was sort of a northern-focused experience. It was mostly the northern schools. And it was really nice to get to know some new colleagues that I've been in touch with ever since that particular event. So it was a really great networking and sort of networking experience, and it did bring a few new tools and tricks to the toolbox that I try to use.
That's great, because that's kind of like what I hope Extend will do. Is there's these for listeners, there's 6 modules in different areas of including teaching for learning, but also technology, collaboration, curation, and scholarly work, and experimenting with technology, all to do with technology enabled learning. And there's lots of stuff to do in these modules, but what I really hope it becomes is a way to dip your toes in and connect, which is sounds like that's what happened for you, and kind of convinces you to keep going and connect with people and build your network. So I'm glad it sounds like it worked that way a bit with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was definitely a return on the time investment for going. It's created new opportunities that I'm not sure I would have had otherwise.
That's great. And then the Northern group can help us lead the charge in spreading it to the other more southerly institutions.
Absolutely. I'm not sure that we'll be leading everything in particular, but it certainly is going to be nice to make those connections that are otherwise separated by about 3.5 hours of Highway 400. So
yeah.
It's definitely going to be nice to connect people, even if it's just digitally, to make sure that the conversations are comprehensive. Because some of the techniques that are being used in big classes of 600 students in Southern Ontario are not necessarily the same as the ones that we might be using in a similar class that only has 50 students, but there are definitely some things that everybody can learn from everybody else. And I think that's one of the huge benefits of making those kinds of connections.
Absolutely. And one of the things we're working on right now with Extend is collecting mostly from the Northern participants, their takes on some of the activities, so that we can leave a trail of their participation on the actual modules, so that people who come behind you can see who's been there and what they did with the work, and then even be able to connect with past participants and build some community that way.
And I think one of the interesting things about that exercise for me is that it closes the loop on the teaching and learning, because I think it's fairly easy for educators, again, kind of at all levels, to forget about their learning roots. And, you know, we talk about this quite a bit in various circles that discuss pedagogy. It's really easy to forget what it's like to be a first-year student, for example, to forget about the nerves and that you have no knowledge going in to a particular course, and then you've got an educator professor at the front who has, you know, just lots of knowledge. Mm-hmm. And whether or not they're able to reduce that to something that's effective for first years is, or whatever year, it doesn't really matter, I suppose. What happens with what you're describing with the examples on the Extend website is we get to go back and play the role of learner and educator for a different group. And I know that my students, for example, I'll see if I can actually get this example to come full circle here. I know that my students, they tend to get most frustrated when you ask them to do something and you don't show them an example. They want to see one in action before they're willing to commit their own time. And I know that even at the Ontario Extend conference in the summer, you know, some of the things that I was less familiar with, like let's say the scholarship of teaching and learning, we would be asked to do exercises in the conference. And I would immediately start looking around the room for examples. You know, if I can see an example of what's happening, then it's easier for me to be able to express myself through my own example. And I think that's one of the best things that's going to come out of some of the collaborations that are being built, and then bringing those collaborations into the Extend website, is to give examples for people that are looking to do more, you know, scholarship of teaching and learning, teaching with tech, any one of those six things. I think those examples are going to be absolutely crucial. And they help to close that teaching learning loop for people that have been doing this maybe for a long time, or people that are brand new to this kind of a career.
Yeah, I think that's what Extend is. It's an exercise in not just open educational resources, but open educational practices. And that's what open can provide, is that try to help close that loop. And and one of the main things is that having educators walk the walk of what they're asking the students to do.
Exactly.
So out of Extend, the Summer Institute, I think the first time you would have connected with eCampus Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
You now have another similar kind of connection with us. What's that?
Well, I assume you're referring to the Open Educational Resource Fellows I'm not sure if I want to say promoted into. I guess let's go with that. That sounds fairly cool, actually. So I'm quite excited to have the opportunity to not only work with the people from eCampus Ontario, and also work with some of my new colleagues from the Summer Institute, but I'm also very interested in contributing back to things like open educational resources. Not only so that, you know, my students can have a better experience, but also so that I can refine some of the things that I'm not as familiar with as I'd like to be. So this is going to be an excellent opportunity for me to give back to a community that I think is doing excellent work, and to hone some skills that I think I would like to have and bring to my own classroom.
Yeah, we're excited that you're a part of it. Absolutely. There's six fellows, and each one is to do some sort of action research. That's right, isn't it?
Yep.
I know you're not necessarily beholden to what you plan to do yet, but what are your ideas for your action research?
Well, I pitched an idea that sort of takes what I have been doing. So we talked a bit about the badging.
Yeah.
So while I believe wholeheartedly in the merits of things like badges and achievements, they're often talked about as being sort of the first step of gamification. They're the easy stuff. Mm-hmm. There is sort of a deeper level of gamification that has different payoffs for learners, and also has a different amount of work for the person setting it up, so usually the educators. And what it involves is a lot more a choice on the student's part on how they approach, you know, whether it's specific learning objectives or the entire course worth of material. And it's called quest-based learning. Sorry, I was sort of scrambling for the title in my head there. It's called quest-based learning, and it takes from video games this notion of, you know, walking up to a wise old figure or somebody in distress, and they say, you know, I need help. I've lost three of my sheep. Can you help me find them? And then in a lot of games, you would walk up to another character, and you get to pick and choose the quests. And you might have to do all of the quests to get through a level, but sometimes the order in which you do them doesn't really matter. And it's just about getting all of them collected in the end. So I'm very interested in this non-linear model of learning as a way to allow advanced students to work at their own pace and to go into deeper, to go deeper with the material. And I'm also interested in how it works with students that might be struggling to go at their own pace and to find supplemental material. So without having that linear structure enforced, sort of letting everybody find their own way to that finish line. Now, what worries me, and I think what worries a lot of educators, is the amount of work involved in doing something like that. Every time you add a decision or add a choice, you've got to be able to account for both of those forks in the road. And that can mean a lot of work. So what I'm particularly interested in is collecting up either OERs that exist or creating new open educational resources so that they can be put in place of some of these learning objectives so that an educator doesn't have to do all of this work from scratch. So I'm looking at sort of combining the two things that are most interesting to me currently, which is deep gamification and the use of open educational resources. So I'm interested in the linkages on how to make it more feasible to offer deep gamification and what the advantages are going to be for students.
Oh, that sounds... I'm looking forward to seeing what comes of that. That's so cool.
I'm looking forward to it too, so I'll keep you posted.
Do any of these games, I'm just thinking what people who aren't involved in gamification would say, like other faculty, about how it aligns to outcomes and assessments. Do you hear that?
I don't get a lot of that currently because most of my gamification right now is at that superficial level. And again, I don't want to detract from it. What I'm doing is not objectives based. It's more just extrinsic motivation for behavior modification. So, you know, keeping them from skipping assignments, that doesn't tie easily to a particular learning objective. I do think that there are going to be challenges, I want to say selling this idea to, you know, faculty that believe more in a traditional linear approach.
Yeah,
it is going to be an interesting pitch or sale. I think it's going to work. I'm really, really optimistic. I'm not going into this with any sense of pessimism at all. This kind of learning is being used in high schools and in primary schools. And I just think we need to have the confidence to take it into the university level. What happens in the high schools is there's a lot of software out there specifically designed for quest-based learning. And there's a couple of problems with it. One, it tends to be proprietary, closed, and expensive. So I guess that was three items, not one. But there's a handful of issues, and it tends to be geared towards younger kids. So the avatars are cartoony, and it looks like a game. It looks like a kid's game, and that's fine at that level. What we need to do is we need to take the principles of what's working in that kind of software and apply it to a more adult-like setting. And that's not to say that university students don't like to have fun and maybe watch cartoons and play cartoony video games. That's great. But I think we need to sort of shake off that kid's coding and look at what's on the inside that's actually functional that we can leverage at a post-secondary level. Because it's the abstraction, it's the learning abstractions that are important for us, not the colorful exterior. So I think what we're going to end up with in the end is something that doesn't look like a game, which will help in the sale, I can assure you. When people come around and it looks like you're playing games, that becomes a much harder sell. And if we talk about gamification, not learning through games, if we sort of take that word for what it's supposed to mean, which is game-like elements in non-game contexts, then I think we can have a good run at this. I think that we can offer a very different and very rewarding learning opportunity to our students. But I think that OERs are going to be absolutely critical for keeping the workload down for faculty members, because You know, if you and I were developing similar courses, we might have serious overlap in some of the things we want to cover, and we don't necessarily want to do all of that groundwork each for ourselves. So I think the sharing, and I think that the availability is going to be absolutely key to making this function.
Do you, maybe we can make a game to teach people how to gamify it.
Yeah, we almost need a game that teaches people how to sell gamification to their colleagues as well. So we got a handful of ideas here. We'll have to talk about this.
Yeah. I think we're pretty much up against the wall for time here, though, but it's been an awesome conversation.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. I look forward to doing it again in the future if possible.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll follow up with maybe some of the results of your research. But thank you so much for joining us on episode 2 of Getting Air. That was Dr. Aaron Longile from Laurentian University. Thank you.
Thank you.